Broadcasting to you not quite live from the Crystal Gondola, the palatial Main Tiltio Studios here in beautiful downtown Edmonton, Alberta, for the education, elucidation, emancipation, enlightenment, and mental emolument of the Nipponistic Hoy Boy. My name is Ian Horner, and this is DieCast. DieCast, of course, being a weekly show highlighting our favorite topics from Japan and Japanese popular culture from a Western perspective. Joining me today, we have the usual suspects from forever. Let's move down the number pad here. We've got a brand new camera person working the board, sitting behind me here, Miss Coriander Dickinson, also host of the 99 Yen Challenge, and going down the board, a panelist on the 99 Yen Challenge, one Mr. Brendan Beach Deary.
Glad to be joining you from Olds, Alberta.
The usual place as always.
Yes, from my couch in Olds, Alberta.
I strike at thee. And joining us from also here in Edmonton, Alberta, Mr. James Oikawa.
That's quite a shine you've got there.
We're not as funny as we think we are, any of us, are we?
No. We've been playing too much Dissidia lately.
And those dulcet laughs you hear coming from across the pond in Hachimantai, Japan, it's Jason Hill.
I'm still not dead and loving it.
Yeah.
What a usual thing to say.
My gosh. So, as I've come to be known to saying, we've got a big steaming pile of topics here again for you. So, shall we just start it off and work our way back in time from the top of the pinboard?
Oh,
works for me.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, well, first up, we've actually got a something from Kotaku here that just happened just the other day. Well, it didn't just happen, but it's one of those things that happens in Japan. The renting of cosplayers.
That sounds illegal.
Yeah, that sounds disturbing.
It does.
Oh, wow, look at her.
We are slaves. We work so hard.
Well, the whole point of this is that it's we've gone to Japan. We've lived in Japan, most of us, at some point, half of us. We've been.
I've never been.
We've been okay. Two of us.
You're half Japanese. You have a. You have an automatic in.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been in Akihabara. We know the whole idea that there are people standing around in their cosplay outfits, having pictures taken of them, and
chewing tobacco.
Sure, why not? At the various events, it's the same sort of deal, basically, that you've got these. Cosplay is a big deal over there in the same way it is.
It is.
Well, in Akihabara, they've taken it a step further where you can now rent a room pre-furnished.
Right.
With all of the lovely beds and the couches and whatnot.
Still sounding illegal.
Yeah. It's just renting a room.
This isn't the health service, is it?
No, it's not. Okay. No. As a direct offshoot of the photography events usually held at DVD and picture book release events, well-known cosplayers like Ushijima E. Niku and Omi Gibson participate in photography events allowing fans to snap up pictures of their own. Studios in Tokyo like Photo Plus near Sugamo Station and Cutie Factory off the Keio Line cater to those amateur cameramen hoping to hone their cosplay pictures taking skills in a far more elaborate way.
Oh, whoa, okay. So they're renting rooms that are decorated a certain way. They're renting people who are essentially semi-pro or professional cosplayers, and you put them in the room and then they get to go in and take pictures of you. Obviously, you go in and take pictures of the model in all these different settings, so you can experiment with different lighting and different position and different poses and stuff like that. So it's basically in a way, it's almost a way to learn how to become a better photographer, or at least have a lot of ways to experiment with being a better photographer. It's weird because it seems prurient still to me. It still seems like, for example, Iroha's Samurai Showdown clothes. I'm reading this directly from the website, noting that a full thong is even available for Iroha's outfit. And it's kind of like, yeah, that sounds a little
illegal.
But Yeah, it just it's a neat idea. It's another way to, because in Japan space is a premium, so it's not as if you're going to be able to say, well, I want to go get a studio and I want to do whatever. But it's like, oh no, we'll rent you a studio space that's decorated. You can put one of these girls or boys or whatever in it and just take photos of them, and that's what it's for.
Well, yeah,
I was going to say, as a semi professional photographer myself, I'm not necessarily interested in cosplayers, although that might change. I think it's actually pretty cool. You can, if you're a photographer, wanting to hone up on your skills, and notice I didn't use the word bone up, but hone up.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty cool. I think it's actually really a good idea. So as long as it doesn't cross that creepy line.
Well, that's the thing the problem that I have. I mean, I don't have an issue with putting together a photo space or putting together a photo equipment for you to rent. It's the fact that it really just seems like you're also renting the girls themselves.
Yeah, it's like, well, I need a place to shoot, but I also need someone to shoot. What an interesting – that's actually a really cool idea, because more often than not, it's like, well, I need to go find a model to take pictures of, and then once I found my model, then I need to go find a studio. And in this case, it's kind of like, oh, well, we provide all of it. All you need to do is bring your camera. We'll even provide the lighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what? And actually, I was going to say, as long as it doesn't cross that line, I think it's, you can rent models, right, as a photographer, just regular models. So why not rent cosplayers too?
Well, yes, it does say a small percentage of the models working at these studios are honest-to-goodness porn actresses. And the poses can get provocative, but make no mistake, most famous of these studios do not appear to be covers for the sex industry.
I went to one of the not-safe-for-work pick links at the bottom of the Kotaku article, actually, and I mean, still, all the models are clothed. They might have, they're wearing what is essentially like bondage gear or swimsuit gear, but every sexual organ has been covered up. So everything that would be, you could wear these on the street, people would look at you funny, but you wouldn't get arrested for them, I don't believe. They all look like they're like, yeah, you're fine. There's no really indecent exposure going on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, this just gave me an idea as a semi-professional photographer. I should be renting my services out to cosplayers.
Yeah, to do professional photos of them. And we have actually in North America, there is a group called cosplayers.com who they go to different conventions and they take photos. They set up usually what happens is they negotiate with a convention for a classroom or a room on site. And then they bring backdrops, they bring all their lighting and everything else, and they take pictures of people. You can come in and you actually pay them to take like about a dozen good photos of you. And in fact, because they like to take pictures of people in different costumes and all that, you can just come in and get photos done. If you like any of the photos, then you can pay them for the photos that they took of you.
Nice.
It's really cool. That's... Actually, the one, if you show my photo on the diecast,
it's on the screen right
there.
Now.
Yeah, that was taken by cosplayers.com. My eyes are properly fucked up, as you can tell, but so it's not their fault. But that's. That's kind of what they do. They have a big backdrop. You stand in front of it. You take a few poses, and they just take some shots of you. If you like them, you just pay them for the privilege. The only thing they don't do is they don't offer direction. It's not like that thing of, work the camera.
What we're talking about here, right here in Japan, is almost exactly the opposite of that. The professional who's being hired in this case is not the photographer. The professional is the cosplayer, and you're there to tell them to pose in a certain way and take pictures.
Yeah.
Wow. For those who say the economy is going downhill and there aren't any opportunities, I say posh. Lots of money to be made.
literally work the camera.
Yep.
Well, I guess while we're on the topic, let's move on here. Actually, I think we've milked this as much as we can. But while we're on the topic of down economies and whatnot, so remember the Governator?
Governator.
Yes.
Wait, what? Like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor of California.
Uh-huh.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he's going to be a cartoon.
What? He is a cartoon.
Oh, he's a caricature, but I don't believe he's actually up till this point become a cartoon. Because now he's a cartoon. I'm just going to play this for the chat while we talk about with the volume down here, but my God, this is the most amazingly crazy.
It's an anime thing. Larry King.
Yeah, there's an animated Larry King. There's an animated Arnold Schwarzenegger. as some sort of Tony Stark-esque figure. He starts the video talking about how he's looking forward to just being a private citizen while intercutting with pictures of him grabbing lightning bolts.
And he has reminds me of those ring.
This reminds me of those 80s TV shows like, you know, Hulk and Friends and stuff like that, except for better animated.
Well, you know, it's funny because the way he looks like one of the bad guys that show up in Captain Planet.
Yeah.
You're exactly right, actually.
He is Tony Stark. He's got his own suit. Power suit.
Well, his own power suit, his own dudes behind the scenes. Why does he have to punch the lock with his signet ring in order to unlock the actual chamber where everything is hidden?
And the chamber's like kind of X-Men-esque from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And he works with a bunch of kids? Yes. What the hell?
Is this a Japanese or American produced animation?
The kids get suits.
It looks American produced, but possibly Japanese animated or Korean animated.
Yeah.
Please say these are his kids. Please say these are his kids.
He's adopted children or real children.
He has a Harley from T2 that turns into a Tron light cycle. Oh, this is great. Yes. I you know what? I don't want to watch this, but I hope this actually gains some popularity. I hope people, you know, just like, yeah, here's the ridiculous thing for you. I just saw a smart car go by.
Oh, yes. Watch out. The smart car is going to transform into a robot that's about to rock the bank.
Wow.
Oh, two.
I mean, it really can't be that much worse than Pro Stars, but that's not saying much.
Or the WWF cartoon.
I like the fact that his speech is that he looks forward to going back and being a regular citizen, which is the kind of thing that you'd think that he would say after he retires from being the governor of California, right? Like, he says, I'm just going to go and be a private citizen from now on. And, of course, this completely lampoons the entire idea of you know, oh, yeah, I want to become a private citizen. God, who does he remind me of now?
Oh, God, he just bullet-timed.
He looks like he's kind of like a bit like Duke Nukem. Are we sure this wasn't like a Duke Nukem thing originally and they just said, hey, wait, what if we made it Arnold Schwarzenegger? My God. Well, in animation, you can do anything.
Well, my real question about this is who wanted this?
Yeah, why?
Is this his project, you know?
Those are smart car robots.
Well, we brought to the information was brought to our oh, God, that cover. Brought to our attention by the Ghibli blog, which unfortunately doesn't give much more information about what's actually going on.
But they do make it clear that it's not an April Fool's joke.
That's unfortunately true, yes.
Yeah. Oh, man, I don't know. This reminds me of Hammer Man for some reason. I don't know why.
But Hammer Man.
Hammer Man. Hammer.
Hammer Man. Hammer.
Yeah, like, what would you call that? A vanity cartoon series.
Yeah.
Essentially what this is. I'm sure he never gets put into like a negative light in the entire thing.
And episode three will be called It's Not a Tuma.
Yeah.
On a very special episode of The Governator.
Episode four, get in the chopper.
Well, let's just think here. We've got, it's coming in 2012, we've got The Governator coming, we've got new seasons of Archer, new seasons of... the Venture Brothers. We've also got Black Dynamite coming to animated TV.
No shit.
Oh, Dynamite. Yeah. That's coming.
Ooh. Speaking of animated TV, I was watching TV on Friday, and guess what I saw on TV?
What?
Pokemon. It's still on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's
definitely.
New episodes. This version
Nintendo
of the show is called
still
Pokemon.
Keep putting out games for it, so...
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of I've got the new ones. I'm actually enjoying them a lot.
So,
it's my
Jason,
guilty little pleasure.
Are you a black person or are you a white person?
Man. You know, you had to bring up that question, didn't you? Actually, I bought the white version. I feel kind of guilty now.
That's fine. It's not as if everyone around you is looking at you knowingly. Like, yes, I see. Supremacist.
I'm just a race tractor.
Penny Arcade made that same comic about that.
Yeah, I thought that. That was a good little moment.
Yeah.
Hey, switch gears.
Okay.
Sounds good.
What do you want, Beach?
My legs hit the chandeliers.
What do you know about that? I got money in the bank.
Iwate, something local, actually.
Well, local for Jason, yes.
Yeah.
Hot damn.
Jason, they're in a Iwate Sake brewer. Made a video message. The Hanami parties help our economic recovery. And we talked about this previously.
Yes, it was on the news here too, on local news, Iwate Teddy B and NHK.
It really is the sake brewer. I mean, obviously, a sake brewer has a bit of an interest in making sure that people go out and have a nice, you know, party and drink. But I think that's pretty cool, actually. It's like, oh yeah, no, we want you to go out and drink and have some fun and support the economic recovery.
Well, I jump in here and I'd say that that's actually not completely incorrect. I mean, unlike the majority of the alcohol we buy in North America, mm-hmm. the majority, from what I understand, or at least the majority of the good stuff, or if not the majority, a good portion of the alcohol that's available out there is locally brewed.
Oh, really?
That's true. And Ian, you've had local Iwate brewed beer, the what the hell is it called again? Byron beer. I brought it for you before, I think.
Yeah, no, that was good beer there. Good sake comes out of Iwate. The best sake, in my opinion, came out of my area, which was the Nagaoka region in Niigataken.
Oh, Ian, do you know why that you have the best sake?
Because we have the best rice.
You have the best rice in Japan in Niigata.
Niigata Koshihikari.
Yep, the most expensive and highest quality rice in Japan comes from Ian's area of Japan, and it is good shit. I swear to God, once you go Niigata, you don't go back. Basically,
well, the thing is, it's not cheap there, even in the area. It's high quality, and they do export it.
I do find it surprising that that something like white rice, especially when you get down to, there's all these different types of Japanese white rice. That there is really a difference, like you can, because you guys have both said, we can really taste the difference between Koshihikari and something else.
Oh yeah,
and that just surprises me because I'm like, I mean, I can kind of do the same thing with ginger ale, but that's not rice is rice to me, you know, like it's white or it's brown, you know.
Well, my parents, when they go to the Japanese market or TNT, they always prefer to get the Tamaki Gold, but that's always so expensive.
Well, it's not just the taste of the rice. It's also the texture has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, you know that if you eat a rice that's really expensive and really good, it has its own natural flavor, and you don't need to douse it in soy sauce or butter. It is that good. And yeah.
Well, I made the change from eating years upon years of eating minute rice. That was what we had in our house, and to go from minute rice. Than to actually eating proper rice, it was like light years of difference, right? So it's like, oh my God, no, real rice actually tastes good. Yes, minute rice tastes like it's warmed over meat, like gruel.
But BG, you also now have a cupboard full of furikake.
That's true. I have like four different flavors of furikake, and I also, I mean, I don't eat Koshihikari. What I eat is, I eat gaba rice, actually, that comes from Koshihikari. It's premium Koshihikari sprouted brown rice. And the GABA has to do with the gamma – I always get this wrong – gamma aminobutyric acid. It's good for you in a lot of different ways. There's a whole bunch of arrows and circles and shit all in English on the package. 750% more GABA and fiber than white rice.
You know, though, I hate to say this about white rice because I love it so much, but it's actually not very good for you if your body can't handle carbohydrates. So what I've done is I've actually switched to a local brand of genmai, which is full grain rice, basically unpolished rice. And you can buy that. It's more expensive, of course, because hasn't been handled, but much healthier for you than the white rice.
I find it funny that which has had less done to it is more expensive.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? It's not sold as much as the polished
stuff.
Yeah, it's
a lower yield. They have to hold.
That's right.
Yeah.
But anyways, let me just we should probably bring it back onto topic with the local Iwate brewery. I just wanted to give you some background on it. The brewery is located in Ninohe Town, and for those of you not familiar with Ninohe Town, it's right next to Hachimantai. It's just like a 15-minute car ride over just to the east of me. Sorry, and. What happened was, we talked about in a previous episode, Tokyo Governor Ishihara stated that he thought they should cancel Hanami celebrations in Tokyo as a sort of mourning for the disaster. And while that was well placed, I really think people need to get out in this warm weather and kind of de-stress a little bit, because even people in Tokyo have been shaking like crazy for the past month, and it's not good for your nerves to be continuously wondering when the next quake is coming. I think a Hanami party would be a great way to kind of, you know, drop some of that stress and relax a little bit. So even people in the disaster areas are hunting down their local Hanami trees and just trying to walking through the parks just to kind of, you know, calm down a bit. So
and you know what would be great? Actually, I thought about this last week and completely forgot to mention it. But if you're going to have a Hanami party, then you should have like charge admission in a way. I mean, you don't normally do that, but make it a thing of that. If you show up, throw a couple hundred yen in a pot and put that towards, yeah, we're going to donate that to the disaster relief across Japan, and, you know, do that. Because then everyone goes out and they have a good drink, and then, you know, throw some money at the problem as well, and you've done more than just saying I'm not going to go out and do anything. You get to go have a good time, and you get to help a good cause.
If I recall, what was actually happening? The reason behind two reasons behind Ishihara's decrying of Hanami was number one was that it's we need to be respectful and we need to be good to these people who have been hard times, and not we need to be austere because it's bad to be happy. And the second reason was that, and the main reason that we were discussing was the productivity aspect of it. That this is not a time for us to be partying. We need to be working hard. And Jason, would you agree with me to say that when you say a de-stressing activity like this will actually lead to higher productivity in the long term?
Oh, exactly. When people get stressed out, how can you work in an office for 9 hours if your heart's pounding and you're constantly wondering when the next one's coming, right? What's coming next? Maybe another nuclear power plant is going to come down, as two almost did on Thursday when the power went out again. But that's for another time, that story. But, you know, that level of stress will actually believe, I don't think people in Japan realize this, but that level of stress will take your productivity down. I mean, you'll have to make up for it by working more hours, but why not just take a couple hours, you know, have a couple beers, enjoy nature, relax a little bit, then the next day go into work feeling a lot more, you know, focused.
Yeah, happy people are happy workers.
Yeah,
exactly. So I agree with you 100%, Ian, with that. I think it. Well, I don't know if you agree either, but from what your point was, is I think it would help people.
And, isn't it in the cultural makeup of Japan too, that, you know, you might work a 10-hour day, and then when you're done working a 10-hour day, you go out to the bar and you can drink till 3 a.m. kind of deal. And, you know, because the whole thing, even parties are kind of a codified thing where it's like, if I go drinking with the boss, then, you know, that's good for my career. But it's also a thing of, we all go out and we drink together because then we're all still bonding as a group, and the group mentality of enjoying each other's company and trying to solidify as a community, right?
Well, and you're drinking at the local pub too.
Yeah, so this is actually a community bonding thing as well. I mean, the earthquake is drawing people together, people who might not have otherwise helped each other even in the past. So why not just say, yeah, everyone go out and have a hell of a Hanami and really enjoy it and get to know your neighbors and get to talk about things that had happened and, you know, and share all this. And, you know, it's just another way to bond even.
Well, just to kind of wrap this up, since I'm so close to the disaster zone, I'm literally 30 kilometers to one of the closest beaches that were completely destroyed. I was thinking, why not ask people in shelters if, you know, they want to go out and drink a little bit, and invite some of the people in other towns to go drink with them and maybe buy them a beer, just kind of to talk to them, let them talk, you know, listen to them. It might actually be therapeutic for some of them. Not for everybody, but, you know, some people may be stuck in those shelters for a month, want to get out and do something, right? I'm sure they do. The stress level in those shelters is probably off the scales, right?
Yeah, and with local businesses destroyed to the fact where you can't do anything because – you know, it's at that point, it's like I'm trying to rebuild what I've already lost, and, you know, being able to say, you know what, everyone's taking the day off to go do this, I can go take the day off and do this too. I mean, it's not going to kill me. I might as well just, you know, get out there and do it. I don't have to. It's the one day I don't have to think about something.
Exactly. So here's hoping that we can, you know, just to let you know, Hanami happens at different times depending on where you are in Japan. In Tokyo, the cherry blossoms are already out and probably almost over right now. Here in Iwate, they haven't even come out yet. We still have snow on the ground here, so it will be another 3 weeks, I think, until we have Hanami.
Well, while you can't actually predict when the next earthquake is going to be, there is at least one thing that's not going to take you by surprise, and that's going to be the rolling blackouts that are occurring.
Ah, yes.
And I'll tell you why.
Well, tell us why.
This is something that I've been excited to see is the way that the Japanese people are helping each other by doing anything they can, literally, in terms of what's been going on in the earthquake. And what's happened now is there's been a particular designer over in Japan who created a wonderful dynamic rolling image system tracking the rolling blackouts. Now, let me see if I can bring it up here. I'm having a little bit of trouble with the board, but that's all right. There we go. It's a it's nerve.
It is. Wow.
It looks exactly like a set of a set of dials and gauges from Neon Genesis Evangelion tracking where, when, and how these rolling blackouts are going to occur. And it looks like currently, well, there are no rolling blackouts today.
Yeah. But I forgot to remind you guys, looking at this amazing little graph or live, whatchamacallit, of how do you describe this in English? I don't remember. Could someone describe this thing in English to me?
Because I've lost my ability. A couple of gauges? I mean, it appears to be, I don't read enough kanji to be able to tell you what those two gauges are actually measuring, but
I'm trying to find it here. I can translate it if I can get it up again. I lost it.
Oh, what I'm looking at is 4,000 kilowatts. So I imagine it's maximum possible power supply, 4,000 kilowatts. Currently, their current power supply is 60%.
How are you reading that?
Because below all the kanji, it's translated in English.
You asshole.
Oh, yeah, look at that. There we go.
Because I know how to read English. That's how come I'm translating that. How many beer have you had so far this cast?
I haven't had any. I just have a tiny window so that the people at home can see.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah, I could translate it, but I don't have to now, so yay.
That's a cool idea, though, because if it lets you keep tabs on what's going on. And it's kind of a semi-entertaining way to see it. Plus, the gauges are huge, so you could technically just open that up and throw it on a second monitor or something, and you could see what's going on in your area, or at least I don't know if that's nationally. Maybe it is nationally. I don't know how Japan shares its power.
No, this is the Tokyo region, but that's a huge region. Like that region services 33 million people. So, Tokyo Denryoku is responsible for that region. Up here, we have Tohoku Denryoku. They're a different company, but you know, they less power, but yeah, this is only Tokyo area.
Well, the real nifty thing too is that this is actually a result of the TEPCO actually opening up their information stream with an API, allowing other people to tap into it. So not only do you have, you know, this sort of thing, but you could theoretically also have an iPhone app that's keeping you up to date immediately and would alert you if a blackout were to occur.
Yeah, at least something to say that, you know, we're, you know, rolling blackout coming in an hour or something. Please, you know, go shut down your whatevers. Make sure everything's
safe. Save your JRPG.
Exactly. Find a save point.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny you should mention that because the good news was the same day the earthquake happened, Tokyo got one of its thermal plants back online, which pretty much would put an end to the rolling blackouts, at least for the spring. So that's good news. Now, when summer comes and air conditioners start to ramp up, we're still in a panic mode. But this graph will be pretty useful to have for that.
Cool.
This meter. That's the word. The English word is meter.
Mitra.
Been in Japan too long, damn it.
Way too long. Okay. Well, I mean, that's hooray for that. Hooray for saving power.
What this thing really needs is, like, you know, the battle music, the boom 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 boom.
That is not just the battle music, James. You may recall that is also the James Bond alternate theme.
Ah.
Okay, so it does sound like that.
It's from the Sean Connery Bonds.
Yes.
This is great radio.
It is. It's music.
I know.
This is what we call filling up air. Well, I mean, there's one other story actually that came out of Kotaku just recently that Brian Crescente published that I really wanted to actually talk to, and we were going to get it until that damn earthquake got in the way.
Mm.
See, ruining everyone's life. including mine. The article actually came out of their DICE coverage just recently, and it's the idea of the article is how one coin saved arcades in Japan and another killed them in the U.S.
Oh,
and you know, because of our constant raving about the wonderful arcades of Japan, arcades are thriving there.
Yeah, actually, no, they're not.
Really? Well, when this was written...
What are you talking about, Jason? They're full. If nothing else, they are full of old men sitting and playing horse racing games.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Actually, it's in the small towns, like in Morioka and places here, they're kind of dying off. There are still a couple game centers left, but since you were here last year, mm-hmm. most of the game centers we went to are all closed.
That's unfortunate. I was hoping to get Beej and Corey into a pod before the year was out.
Oh well,
they're still there. So they're still there for now.
Okay, good.
I have a sense. Even having never been to Japan, I have a feeling that game centers, at least in major areas, will probably be around for a while because, well, you know, one of the major things that goes on in arcades over here is the big game, the big experience that you can't have at home. You have to go to somewhere else to do it. But I mean, as we also saw, like in Edmonton at West Edmonton Mall, one of the largest tourist attractions in the world, arcades take a shit kicking there. Like Playdium was a huge thing where you could go and play the big games, the 8-person IndyCar racing games and all that kind of crap. And that closed. That was up for like maybe 4 or 5 years and it closed down because it just there's no real money in it. Even when you're paying $1 a pop. And that references to actually what this article is about, is it's really the quarter. The quarter is what killed arcade gaming in the United States from the sounds of it. Because when you play, you come up and you're like, oh, I have a quarter. I'll play some Galaga. You put it in. And you have to have enough play time so that you enjoy that you've put a quarter in and you can play it for a while. Problem is people got really good at those kind of games. So the games get more complex. They get harder to play. Then you get to a point where you're dropping quarter in and you get maybe at most 2 minutes or 3 minutes of play time. And you start to feel like, well, I feel like I'm getting gypped because I wanted to play for longer. So that gets you pumping in more quarters or it gets you saying, fuck this game. I'm not going to play it anymore. And yet in Japan... What are all the, as we've even seen here, if you see a Japanese machine here, you see right on the coin slot, what does it say? It doesn't say 25 yen, it says 100 yen. And that's the difference.
Oh, yeah.
Jason, is there a sign on there coins? If you could take care of that?
Oh, sorry.
Let's wait till you do that, and then we can fix it out post.
Yes, even Circuit Circus in West Edmonton Mall has changed. It's not that anymore, and it's a smaller thing now.
It's 100 yen coins.
Whoa, Jason, you're silencing.
Oh,
let's wait for Jason to plug and unplug there.
Okay, hold on. How am I
now, gentlemen?
Much better. You're perfect.
Okay, those 100 yen coins, they don't feel like 100 yen. They feel like a quarter, actually.
They are about the size of a quarter. You're correct on that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually... Yeah, you were correct, Jason. The game center is kind of on the decline in Japan even now, but
yeah,
and you're right, also right, Beach. In the major centers, it will stick around because it still has that critical mass to be able to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what happened is we did see a decline in the games in Japan because we didn't, or in North America, because we didn't have the quarter and we didn't have the critical mass, and those two things go hand in hand. You know, if we can't get enough money out of each coin that's being pumped into the machine, well, okay, then you can't keep building. You'll have to start closing arcades.
Exactly.
It's why in Canada we didn't actually have any more arcades than the US did. We got the Looney, which is great now in our vending machines for that reason. The people who vend love it, and they were even happier when we got the Toonie. Oh, great, now we can charge more than $1 for a pop and not have to give change, and there's no psychological problem associated with one coin. So we can charge up to $2 for that.
But exactly.
We don't have the arcades.
Yeah. I'm channeling an 80s tune here. It was like when it goes, quarters kill the arcade star.
That's a reach. It's funny though because I mean the Looney came out in Canada, and of course, because after having 25-cent machines here for the longest time, and then some machines just start coming out. Like I don't know if it was Street Fighter 2, might have been Mortal Kombat, when they start coming out and it's like 50 cents to play, right? You're like, what? And then you have to put in two credits. And it's like I drop in my credits and it now you're playing 50 cents at a time, and then the Looney comes out and it's like now you're playing like LA Machine Gunners or whatever the hell it is you're playing, and you're dropping in a Looney to play that game. But the games look more awesome and all that. That kind of, I think, was the drive. Like, that would have probably helped out over here. Whereas in the States, because I'm thinking, oh, yeah, well, we had a dollar coin for a long time, and it made a lot of sense when you go play in an arcade because you drop in a dollar and you play whatever. And I worked in an arcade for a summer. And the amount of people who came up to get loonies, the amount of people who came up to get quarters, way more loonies given out every day than quarters, which was kind of weird because I thought, oh, there'll be a lot more quarter gaming going on. No, people would be like, can you give me like $10 worth of loonies? I'm like, oh, yes, sure, why not? It's really weird. I'd want to drop $10 on this game. And I'm like, you're going to drop 10 bucks into an arcade machine. And that's kind of like, fucking go buy a book or something. You have more, entertain you for longer. It's just, it's weird because it's like, yeah, in the States, the Susan B. Anthony dollar and the Sacagawea dollar, and I mean, they've never caught on as much as they've tried to, like, oh yeah, a dollar coin would be really catch on. And all these people who have vending machines and arcade machines and, you know, anything who could, anyone who could benefit from a coin like that, is just too much, I don't know, stubbornness on the part of the United States. There's just, people won't adopt that. And I'm like, they won't adopt it because you won't take the dollar bill away. If you take the dollar bill away, take it out of circulation, they have to adopt it. And they'll bitch about it because we bitched about the toonie and about the loonie, but now we use them all the time because there's no alternative.
Actually, I'm really interested to see now because the rumors are flying around now that the iPhone 5 will actually come out with a near-field communication.
Yeah.
What may actually end up happening is that the U.S. market may actually end up leapfrogging the whole need for a dollar coin and go straight to the TASPO, but the PASMO and the other near field communication touchless cards.
Yeah, those are. I'm completely in favor of seeing more of that going on because if I can take my phone and wave it and then basically say, oh yeah, the machine says, okay, what do you want to buy? And beep, I hit a button, and then I get a message, I get a quick text message or something on my phone that says, do you, or at least a notification on my phone that says, do you want to buy this? And I hit yes. And then it's, everything's been finalized.
You don't even get that.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not really a fan of the idea of take my, like, walk past the vending machine and then beep and then have it register that I wanted to buy something. I'd prefer to, like, this is what I want to buy, scan my phone past it or something. But I kind of want that moment of, I just want to say yes, even though I know it slows down the transaction. But we'll see what happens. Who knows what could happen for us, for the North American market. I know that Nokia, Jesus Christ, Nokia tried to do this. They had a thing in their they had a vending machine they ginned up. The idea was if you wanted to use your phone to buy something, you walked up to it, you scanned your phone on it, and then the machine would register that your phone was there, so you have a beep or whatever. And then you have to, I think it sent you a text message saying, do you want to buy something from this machine? But of course, it's a text message, so it could take like up to however much time for you to get the text. You have to say yes. Then you had to input what you wanted on the machine. And then when you input what you want, before it comes out, you have to wait for the text message to say, you want to purchase this, and you hit yes, and then the thing will drop out of the machine, and then then you've got it. And it was like this ungodly long process that depended on multiple text messages.
That's already been a thing. In fact, it was actually, if I recall, there was reports of people actually just going ahead and buying random sodas for people as they walked past.
But it's kind of a retarded thing because I want just a way to say, like, even if there was an NFC app on the iPhone, so that if I went beep to scan it and a thing came up saying, you're talking with this machine, do you want to buy something? Yes. And then I buy what I want and I'm done because my phone's already in my hand. That would make sense to me. And don't do this text messaging bullshit because sometimes I can wait an hour before getting a text from somebody.
Well, no, I'm actually don't have less of a problem with the confirmation because at least the way it worked in Japan, these machines were not usually hooked. hooked up to a credit card or your bank account directly. You'd go ahead and load them up with cash, much you'd go and you'd take cash out of a vending or out of a cash machine and put it in your wallet. And it's not like they're not exactly to the point where you can, they never will because they don't want this. They're not just scanning your butt as you walk past a vending machine. You have to very deliberately put and hold your phone or your card on the directly on the reader.
Right.
Before it's going to register as a charge.
That's right.
And being able to fill it up, like being able to say I want it, like, because there's a difference between if I can put $5 or $10 on that, on my phone, I can access whatever and say put $10 in my NFC payable or whatever, and I just have that in there whenever I need it. That's different than opposed to just charging my phone bill directly.
Oh, definitely.
Because at least if I lose $5 or $10 due to a machine error or due to like multiple charges or something, it's like at least it was only $10.
Yeah.
And I think you definitely need to avoid the whole the whole PIN number and confirmation thing. Otherwise, people are never going to use it. You need to make it more convenient than the current method.
Mm-hmm. But you need to happen. I also feel like you need to lock down the amount of money that you can spend on that, because the worry I get is that if I lose my phone or if I misplace my phone for an hour or 2 hours and somebody grabs it. And it doesn't mean somebody steals my phone. What if when I have kids and one of my kids decides to borrow my phone and he starts buying shit from vending machines because he's seen me do it, and he starts to like rock it up. Oh yeah, I could buy like 30 bags of chips, and he does that.
Then you're
a bad
parent.
Then I'm a bad parent, yes.
It's no different than the kid going out and stealing your wallet or stealing your credit card and running it up on the internet. I saw daddy type these numbers into this XXX domain and he got all the porn.
So I'm going to do it too, and I get to look at dirty nude photos of
pictures of better mummy.
Yeah, better mummy, yes. Fuck. I'm going to get in so much trouble when she gets home and she hears this. Oh, actually, okay, I'm interested then, just in terms of transit. I know we're kind of, as a thing, because you guys have your pass cards in Japan to ride the rail and transit and stuff like that. And so is that just that, is it like you get unlimited rides, or is it you actually buy credit on the card and you ride with that for the month?
Oh, Beej, how little about Japanese transit you remember us talking about.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really understand, because, I mean, I know that over here, if I buy a bus pass, I get unlimited rides on my bus pass.
That is not the way it works.
Yeah.
Oh, so not the way it works.
Everything in Japan transit-wise is actually based on the distance you're traveling.
Okay, that's kind of how it happens in Vancouver, I guess.
Yeah,
so they do it by zones, yeah.
So, well, it's not really zone. I guess it kind of is a zone thing, but it is just based on a distant travel.
Yeah.
And so the longer you're on that, and it works for buses, taxis, trains, Shinkansen,
right.
Whatever.
But that means that then when you scan your card, that it records your travel, like how far you're traveling.
It records your in point, and then it checks your out point, and it charges you the standard ticket price for that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then at the end of the month, you get a bill, and you pay that bill.
You charge your card usually with money.
Yeah, you
can hook up your credit card too, but yeah, one or the other.
That's what I meant. I was kind of like, is this actually a thing that you get that you have to pay money per ride, but it goes on your card, and so the card is what's your pass to do whatever.
It's quite literally just you think of it as a different bank account that you have to put money into.
Neat.
There's two types of pricing too for the zones. There's butthurt, which is JR, and there's oh my god, that's expensive, which is private companies.
Ah.
Yeah.
So if you could get off the train and you can't afford the price, or
you don't
want to charge
know.
Your card up or whatever,
you're
that's
walking home.
That's why they take you to the room.
And by the room, that means the business hotel, because you can't afford a taxi back to your home.
Yeah. So you have to pay for a hotel to stay in, and everything just gets worse.
I think what James meant was, what happens if you get to the end of the line and you can't pay, you know?
Oh, then there's a lot of awkward humming and hawing.
And you pretend you don't speak good Japanese.
Yes, this is where you pull the gaijin card, which I don't support. I don't think that's a good thing at all, but some people do that. I lost my card. I mean, yeah. So they take you to the room.
I guess while we're on the subject then here of transportation, I think it might be an idea for us to have a little chat about the whole no more fallen leaves for Japan's elderly drivers.
Oh, yeah, that's a good topic.
Yeah, see, now, as you may or may not know, in Japan, when you first get your driver's license for the first year, you're given a sort of a chevron of green and yellow that yes. indicates that you are a new driver. And
we see a lot of those over here with a bunch of guys who want to rice their vehicles up by putting these stickers on them because they think it makes them look hard.
It means you're a bad driver.
Yes.
And then, of course, there are the people who try to keep those on their cars after their first year.
Yep.
Like it somehow gives them a pass to be a bad driver. Well, the elderly had one as well that was orange and yellow. And it's
yes.
supposed to look like a fallen leaf. I thought it looked more like a teardrop of urine and blood. But but apparently they're moving away from that now towards a new, what I guess you could say, shamrock.
Or if clover.
Yeah, there, that's better.
Yeah.
And it has
the Yotsuba.
Yeah, and apparently it has an S for senior inside it.
Yes.
Or a couple of infinity symbols.
But that people didn't like apparently using a tear-shaped symbol of decay.
Yes, the Japanese seniors did not want to be associated with dead foliage. Just wasn't in their game plan.
What a good idea. Hmm. I can appreciate that. I like the design of these things actually. They're kind of weird and swoopy, and they're and they have an interesting color scheme because it's that kind of that moss green and emerald green and that rust orange and the very light faded yellow. Yeah.
Yes. It's, you know, now they have their own superhero symbol too, right? Like, oh, this is a job for a senior.
Slow driver, man.
I disagree with all of you. I actually really I really like the old logos for both the new and the elderly drivers.
Do you have a picture of the old one?
It was right there.
It's been on the screen, actually.
Is it? I can't see the screen. I can't see the screen.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a teardrop. Well, I'll let me bring you the give you the link in the Skype chat so you can see it. Talk about, yes. Corey posted it in the IRC, too.
Oh, okay.
Even the kids at home can see what's going on here.
Hooray.
You just right. hold everything up. Jeez, Peach.
Sorry.
It almost kind of looks like the
I
Google
see it.
Chrome symbol too, almost.
Okay, it didn't load originally in the page when I pulled up the page. It didn't load in my page.
Oh.
I don't know. It's kind of it looks like a seed to me, not a tear. But I don't know. I mean, obviously the new one's a little more eye-catching because it's a more unusual shape. I'm still keen on the new rather than the old one. The old one looks a little boring. The new one has some splashes of green. It looks colorful.
I'm surprised that the old people were willing to go for the new thing because, well, they don't like new things.
Yes. Fine point.
But I guess unless you guys have any other points to make on that. Speaking of old things, we're bringing one back.
Oh, good.
Uh-oh. It's time for Beach to tell us about his webcomic of the week.
Is it?
Whoa.
Yes.
Blast from the past.
Fine. All right. Fortunately, there are every so often I do add new comics to the list, and I do get rid of old ones as well. And I found one just recently, Modest Medusa. And it sounds like, okay, it must be like this. It's about a Medusa, but it's the cutest damn comic. And here's the frustrating part. It's hosted on Drunk Duck right now, and it's kind of sucks that I'm telling you guys about this because it's in the chat now. And but it's on drunkduck.com, and Drunk Duck just recently had a problem with their site where they lost a lot of images. So if you want to see it, you actually have to go find the Webcomics Nation link for it, which is in like every single one of the Jake Richmond. He's the cartoonist. He is posting the link to Webcomics Nation links to this comic, and it is so goddamn cute. Start from the beginning, and it's about this Medusa who shows up in this guy Jake's house. Jake's actually writing it as if this is actually happening to him, is my understanding. And of course, it's not. But it's about this little, like, she's like 8 years old, and she's a naga, like a snake creature thing. But she has two arms, but she has four snakes for hair, and it's just it's darling. It's really – and so cute, and he feeds her this is an important salient point. He feeds her these things called chocodiles, And any of the U.S. listeners might know what these things are, but apparently most of the people commenting on his site don't know what they are. And a Choco Dial is essentially a chocolate-covered Twinkie. Hostess makes them, used to make them. They still kind of make them in some areas. But it's really cute. It's really funny. The art's really good. It's really simple and flowing. There's lots of really good expressions. Everything is in color by a certain point. Like, I think the earlier stuff was all black and white. But no, it's really cute. It's really entertaining. It's only about 40 or 50 strips in so far, so it's really easy to catch up on. And he debuted it not too long ago, and he's been getting a ton of share on this. Like, tons and tons of people have been coming to the site to read this. It's becoming one of the more popular comics, is my understanding, because so many people are looking at this now. So I don't know how popular it is on Drunk Duck, but I know that it's getting more and more popular as it goes. So I would just say go check it out.
Excellent. We'll give it a week, and you'll probably love it. So with that, I think it's time to wrap up this thing. James, where can people find you?
People can find me at twitter.com/RadioWasabi and also Radio Wasabi on 117 World FM here in Edmonton, Sunday nights at 11.
Excellent. And Jason.
People can find me at Twitter on @jasohill, JASOHILL. And now people can find me on Pokemon White. My friend code is 3825-867-24470. Wait. Fuck you, Nintendo.
That'll be easy to remember. There's a nice mnemonic for that, I'm sure.
People should start using the peg dot peg.gd and start using it, and may give themselves their own short link to a friend code.
Ah.
Yes. So you can actually hash your own friend code. It'll be great. And Beach.
People can find me. I'm Tux Beach on Twitter. You can also find me and all my friends having a lot of fun on synaptic-chaos.com. We are Synaptic Chaos Theater, doing improv and semi-scripted comedy for all the best conventions out there right now. And in fact, you'll be able to catch us in 2 weeks at SakuraCon in Seattle, Washington.
Excellent. Ooh. I look forward to that, actually.
Me too.
So, my name is Ian Horner. You can find me at iHorner on the Twitters, at tiltyhouse.com for everything else I do. If you're interested in watching the live show, you can actually check us out at die-cast.tiltyhouse.com. There you'll find links to all of our other shows, as well as our Twitter feed, which will update you, letting you know when we are recording, so you can watch us. And, of course, if you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a comment on iTunes. It's the best way for our new listeners to find out about the show and for our old listeners to feel good about themselves for liking the show before you did. So, with that, my name is Ian Horner again, saying the die has been cast.